Welcome to Work From Your Happy Place, the podcast that equips you with the tools, know-how, and motivation to live your dreams and find your happy place. Be sure to sign up for our free weekly newsletter for a recap of the week's guests and a preview of what's in store. To sign up, simply text the word happy place with no space to 33444. Now, it's my pleasure to introduce the host of Work From Your Happy Place, Belinda Ellsworth.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Work From Your Happy Place. I'm your host, Belinda, and I've got a great show in store for you today. I've got Carrie Severson with me. Carrie is the CEO of the Unapologetic Voice House, an independent publishing agency. She has been in the storytelling space for more than 20 years. It is our pleasure and mine to welcome Carrie to our show today. How are you doing, Carrie?
I'm great. Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Well, of course. So let's just take a moment, fill in some of the gaps of this bio. Tell us about your journey. How did you become the CEO of a publishing house?
Well, that started long ago in childhood, actually. I always found writing to be lethargic and therapeutic. I was bullied a lot when I was a kid and always came home and would write to kind of express like all that like pent up stuff. And I got into journalism and graduated with a journalism degree a long time ago because I wanted to change where the spotlight landed in terms of stories that young girls were reading and stories that women were reading as they were raising their young girls. And so that's always kind of been a driving force for me. Along the way, I got into public relations and then became an entrepreneur.
Okay.
So I started a nonprofit 11 years ago, and it caught on fire and went national. And I had an independent publisher actually come to me and say, hey, I think you should create workbooks to sell around the country as a way to grow your organization. And so I did. I did that four times. And when I burned out, I went back to my roots of storytelling as a way to heal. And I had women coming out of the woodwork asking me to help them share their story because I was writing for massive outlets, Red Book, Marie Claire, The Huffington Post, things like that. And that sort of sparked an idea. I never saw myself as a storytelling coach. I never saw myself as somebody that taught how to share stories. It just sort of came out of demand. And when I decided to put together a memoir, I went back to my happy place of writing and started to look at where can I go get a traditional publishing deal? How can I get an agent? How can I get this, you know, in bookstores? And I pitched 80 agents and was turned down by 35 of them, all for the same reason. I didn't have a big enough platform. And so one day I woke up and I intuitively got this like strong nudge to be the house, start another business, and provide all the tools and resources for women just like me who have a really strong voice, but may not necessarily have a platform. And so the Unapologetic Voice House was born again from this place of seeing an opportunity and just sort of taking it. And it's been a beautiful process ever since.
That's awesome. So tell us a little bit about where that business is at today. That sounds amazing.
Yeah, thank you. We represent close to 50 authors. We publish nonfiction and fiction work. My sweet spot really is it's still in that space of launching strong female voices, putting a spotlight on strong female stories, characters. So I think we've published 20 books so far, and several of those have been anthologies with more than one, you know, contributing author. We have many more in the pipeline. Memoirs, historical nonfiction, romance, sci-fi. It's very fun. It's very cool. Poetry books. We just published a poetry book a couple weeks ago that is doing really well. So it's very fun. I love it.
Oh, that's awesome. So is it predominantly then female authors?
Yes. I think we have three male authors or four male authors. We have four.
Okay.
One was in our anthology book, but the rest are women. Yes.
Okay, perfect. So then how has the business shaped your lifestyle today?
Well, I started mid-2019 and first couple of clients came in right away. I want to say like the first author showed up in that last part of 2019. And then when 2020 hit and everything kind of went sideways, a major learning curve on how to balance entrepreneurship, growing a business while also supporting my husband's biological kids, my bonus kids in their homeschooling opportunities or ritual learning. So it's hard to pull it apart in terms of what have I learned from the business and what have I learned from personal. However, I can say that the more deeply connected I feel to, I talk in terms of energy. I'm highly intuitive and an empath. And so when I start my day with connecting to the house, the unapologetic voice house, and asking it how I can support it, my life does work better. So looking at myself, not as the whole house, but as an entity of it, that's allowed me to sort of grow personally. When I try to be everything for everybody, I get burned out. And so my real big lesson, I guess, from the last couple of years has been learn how to incorporate myself into my business versus allow my business to overrun me, if that makes sense.
It does. What are some ways that you have sort of set boundaries or done that? Because I think that is a very difficult thing for people, and they hear that they need to do it, but then they don't even know really where to begin or what are the first steps to start taking.
Well, my first step was to block out an hour for myself in the middle of the day. I take 12 to 1. I don't accept a call during that time. That is my time to get a 20-minute workout in or a nap and some food, go for a walk, do whatever I need to do for self-care. And it's a consistent, it's a thing I refuse to compromise on.
Okay.
Once I did that for a solid year, and I did that during COVID, I also started taking Fridays as my like play day, like an opportunity for, I won't take calls on Fridays. If I feel like there's a lot of work to do, desk work, I'll do that there because that's my choice. If I feel like the best thing for me as an entrepreneur is to spend the day outside, that's my day outside. And then, you know, the weekend comes and my life is personal. That's a thing for me. I won't compromise on when my bonus kids are in the house and, you know, the first thing they say to me is, it is a work day. I want to give them everything that I can. And so I'll work, you know, if I have to during their naps, but I have those boundaries in terms of, they come first on the weekends.
Good. It's funny because before I traveled a lot, I used to keep Fridays for exactly that. It was kind of like I wouldn't schedule any appointments. It would be my catch-up day. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
If I want to work in my office, whatever. And then as I became a professional speaker, Friday was always travel day. So I was always traveling to locations, speaking, and then coming home. And so I made Wednesday sort of my day to catch up. And then once COVID happened and I have no travel, I really switched that back to Fridays. So it's really interesting. And I just say that because people can do that. They can switch it depending on their circumstance to meet their particular needs at the moment.
Right. Yep.
Yeah. So let's talk about skill sets. Okay. What have you identified as two of your greatest skill sets?
Well, it took me a long time, but my intuitive skill set is actually a strength that I lean on for business, especially when I have this nagging feeling where I'm talking to somebody and I'm, you know, not excited about the project, or I feel like I have to sign them because I have to take on a client or something. Going back to my intuition to really tap in and ask me, you know, like, and all the things that I believe in, what's this feeling about? That always serves me well. And it's a skill that I learned how to hone and I will spend time strengthening. So I think that's a big one. And then, the second piece around mindset, in the writing space, there's so much, we come across so much head trash in terms of, you know, imposter syndrome, perfectionism. I'm working through some, you know, I'm working through my own edit from my own, you know, my own book that I'm putting into the process here in the pipeline to publish next year. And I automatically recognize those things that happen when you're like, who's going to read this? Why does this even matter? Those like upper limit kind of ceiling pieces, recognizing that that's my head trash. I may not necessarily know how to flip it, but I'm really good at recognizing this is a story I'm telling myself and it's not necessary and it's not my truth. So those are two things that have really helped me professionally, specifically professionally. And I'm really proud that I'm able to, after so many years of running a business, call them my strengths, because I felt like I hid from them for a long time.
That's really great. And that's a really great point, is I do think we sort of back away from those. So imposter syndrome, it is pretty strong. And I think for a lot of people, it's gotten worse. Like, I see more people talking about it, sort of suffering from it. And I think that's because we've been so isolated. It's easier to get into our headspace because we're not around a lot of other people. And so have you, other than identifying that you're doing it, because I can recognize I'm doing it too, but what are some things that you can offer as advice for people to not only recognize they're doing it, but like move out of it?
Well, I'm always by a journal. I have like three sitting here right now for whatever reason, maybe. And I will write out my feelings around a certain topic. And then I'll ask myself, like, is this my truth? Why do I feel this way? And who told me this? And if it's those, the second and the third questions are really easy for me to respond to first. Like, where did this come from? Who told me this? It's usually something I picked up from somebody else. And then, is that my truth? If it came from somebody else, it's not mine. So if I'm able to write down no, it's like an immediate release. I can feel it all over my body. And then I'm able to start to move through the acceptance that the story I'm telling myself can easily fade away. Maybe not easily, but it can fade away.
And don't you think that we allow circumstances, and I mean not just big circumstances, but just in the moment circumstances, allow that to affect how we feel or how we perceive what we're actually dealing with in that space?
Yeah, totally. And then it impacts like how we show up and how we treat others and how we treat ourselves. And so I will recognize that when, for no particular reason, I'll start to feel like I have to do more, work faster, work harder, reach out to more people. And I'll stop myself and I'm like, well, why am I doing this? There's like nobody around me. I'm the boss and I can make my own rules as I go. There's no one telling me I have to, you know, follow all these things that are out there. Like, you have to call so many people a day, or you have to pitch yourself to so many different places. And it's those types of external circumstances that always catch me first and give me an opportunity to go back to my roots, in terms of like, I've run three businesses. This one is pretty amazing. I set boundaries for myself. I work on myself pretty religiously. I got this. And my future self knows I got this. So I'm good where I'm at.
Good. So, outstanding accomplishments. What's something that you've achieved that you're pretty proud of?
The first business that I started, that nonprofit that caught on fire, it was a bullying solutions organization for young girls. And I launched it during the height, or maybe the start of like the girl-on-girl bullying, and how that became like an international phenomenon. And I want to say it was 2012. I ended up in an advertising campaign in Glamour magazine for recognizing women around the country who were doing phenomenal things for young girls. And that was a pivotal moment in my life of really being able to accept that I can do great things. I'm really proud of that. That was a big moment.
I bet. And do you still, are you involved with that organization still, even as kind of on the outside?
No, we closed it in 2017. The program that we created, it's called Supergirl, and the workbooks are still being purchased. They're still out there, and I felt confident and comfortable closing it, knowing that the work that we created is still serving girls.
Good.
Yeah.
It is a problem. So I'm glad to see that you were doing that work and that, and that it's still, that's awesome. So what's a challenge? What's one of the greatest challenges that you faced? And then how did you work around that?
You know, I would say like time management is always an issue, because there's so many moving pieces to a book specifically, and training, like in the beginning when everything just sort of popped in my business and so many people came on at first, I really had to accept the fact that one of my weaknesses is in that the policies and the procedure component and tediously laying that out. And so I went out and I found somebody who I recognized as that's one of your strengths. That's not mine. And I want to hire you to help me build this foundation so that I can have a process moving people forward, so I don't have to be in the center of everything anymore. So that's something I do, particularly having experienced burnout before and knowing what that does on your mental health, what it does on your physical body and your emotional body too. That foundational principle is key, and recognizing that I needed help there. That's, you know, I went out and I found the best person I could for that.
Perfect. And I think that's always an important piece of being in business, is finding resources and learning to grow in the things that you're not as good at, to either become better or allow that person to take on that role or responsibility.
Right.
Absolutely. So what does working from your happy place mean to you?
I love it. So for me, it's the actual location of it will change. For me, it's the energy of how do I feel when I'm doing it. So when it was, you know, in 2020, it was usually like the corner of my couch by myself in quiet space. Right. Now I'm really enjoying, you know, every once in a while, maybe like once or twice a month, I'll go back out to a coffee shop, but like, you know, physically distance, and we're still able to sit outside. But over the last month specifically, my happy place is recognizing that by 10 a.m., I want to have had some personal time to work on my mental health, my physical health, my emotional health, and I will sit at a computer anywhere in my space, my home, dressed like I'm going to work. So for right now in this moment, my happy place is I have on a dress, and that feels really good, even though I'm not going anywhere. And I lost that part about work in 2020. It was like me in yoga gear for, you know, all year long. But right now my happy place is putting real clothes back on.
Do you know, it's funny, because there were a few days that I didn't really get dressed, or I might have just had on like yoga pants and a top or whatever. But I would have to say, and I think that it helped me tremendously, that throughout COVID and continuing on right now, I have gotten dressed every single day. And I would say 90% of the time I've done my hair and makeup.
Yeah.
And it makes a huge difference. And I do a lot of lives, so I kind of have to be sort of camera ready. But I think that forced me, or I could have probably not done it. But because of that, then it made me, even on days I don't have a lot of camera work that I have to do, I'm doing it anyways. It created a good habit for me in that space, which I'm really glad, because I was listening to someone yesterday saying, I finally just needed to put on real clothes, and I found that I hadn't worn real clothes in almost a year. And I was thinking, I've worn real clothes almost every day. So it just made me feel good.
Yeah. No, that it's true. It's the feeling it gives you. And so if I'm able to get into the emotion of happy, I can work from anywhere. And so that all really does start with my mental health of what will make me happy today. Doing a good workout and putting on a dress. So there, that's it.
Awesome. Yeah. I love that.
Thanks.
So if someone was listening right now, which hopefully there's a lot of people listening, but if there's someone out there listening that is wanting to write a book, connect with you, what kind of advice do you have for this person in sort of going through that process?
Well, first off, writing a book can sometimes be very isolating. It can feel like a very lonely experience because it's basically you, your thoughts, your past, and your work, your computer. And you will get into this space of who do I talk to about it? And it's important to recognize there are some people in your life who will be super supportive. And then there's others who may think, you know, you're wasting your time or it's taking time away from something else that they want you to do. And so finding the right community is something I always recommend. When I was in my 20s writing a lot, I was in more than one writing group. When I started writing again for big massive outlets in my 30s, I got into online writing groups. It's important that you have a community because the work that you put into a book is very personal and it's not always something you want to share with people who don't understand that process. So my advice for anyone listening in whatever stage you're in when it comes to your book journey is to get yourself involved in a really supportive writing community.
That's great advice. I've not heard anybody else share that. So that is super great advice because I do think it's daunting and it can be overwhelming. Is there some tools that you have or advice you have for organizing yourself through that process?
Well, I always go by genre. So if you're writing nonfiction, find like a memoir community. If you're writing fiction, I was at this conference once years ago when someone on stage said fiction writers are like blue monkeys. They are their own little tribe, right? And so very specific, super creative. And you can break it down even into like, are you writing a romance? I'm sure you can find a romance writing group. Are you writing sci-fi? I guarantee you there's people there that are doing that too. And you want to make sure that you have some boundaries in place in your mind before you go into it so that you can trust the people in that space to know that no one's going to rip off your idea or you're not just walking in and like oversharing you really do trust the people that you're with.
Good. So I know for myself, I've been writing this book and I'm trying to get it done and I've had a lot of other projects and things going on. And so a lot of it's been online and I've just been writing and sort of revisiting it or feeling like I'm not happy with it. And it's just really not been getting anywhere until I finally printed out exactly what I had and then put it into the chapter order. And it was amazing to me. That has done it for me. Like I can't even begin to say how much I've advanced in the last 5 days on it when I wasn't feeling good about it. And now I realize it's further along than what I thought it was in my head, and it is better than what I was thinking it was in my head. So for me, I just got a binder, and I put finished chapters on one side, and then I put unfinished on the other, but then I did little sticky notes on them so I could see where each chapter began and ended and what I would need to add to that to finish it. It's been super helpful for me, and I just did that. I just figured that out on my own. So I don't know if you have any little helpful tips like that, but that was just super helpful for me because in my brain, I was like, I started doing imposter syndrome really big. Like, why am I even doing this? This isn't even very good. I haven't made any progress on this at all. Those were all the stories that I was telling myself until I finally just got it printed out. And then I could see exactly what was missing, exactly what I needed to change, exactly what I needed to keep going, and that it actually was better than I thought it was. That was probably my biggest revelation. And the whole thing is, you know what? This is actually pretty good. It's further along than I thought.
I love that. When we work with clients who are in the writing like the beginning stages, the first thing we'll do is actually create a roadmap and outline very detailed, like kitchen sink kind of thing, where it's like, it's a several day process of lay everything out that you think could possibly go into this. And then we just start to put it into, you know, a tree of some kind. This story is going to go support this lesson, and this one will go over here. So at the end, they have a full picture of what their book will look like from start to finish. And we get really specific on the details that are going into it. And so having a well thought out outline before you start any book is so helpful. You know, I love printing it out and sticking it up on my some wall. I used to do that all the time when I was working on beginning projects. So I would dedicate a space that I would write, and I would set up like, it would make it really pretty. I would have like plants and flowers, and I love crystals. And so there'd be crystals and, you know, music. And I would, I created a little door hanger for myself so people knew not to bother me. And I printed out the outline and I stuck it up on the wall. And I meditate before I write so that like, I do feel that I'm creating the book from my highest energy. And I would go into meditation with the intention of knowing exactly what chapter I was going to work on in that session, that writing session. And the best, I mean, I've been writing for professionally for the masses for more than 20 years. And when I started doing that, meditating before I wrote, the book that I'm editing right now is the best thing I've ever written. And it feels so much better. And that says a lot because I've written a lot of stuff, but, it is good. You know, having an idea of where you want to go, a roadmap, creating a good connection with the book, and then having a good community that you can turn to.
Wow. That's great. Great advice. So what additional advice would you give to others wanting to either A, be in business for themselves, or have a book in them that they think they want to get out to the public?
Well, I run my business like an agency. So we have editors that are phenomenal. They're like retired editors from like Random House and Simon & Schuster and St. Martin's Press. And so I love working with them, and we put our projects through. Having a good editor that you know knows their stuff is key. And you'll pay the most for that one person. That one person's job is to make your work 100 times, you know, brighter. And so be sure that when you hire an editor, that you know that they know what they're doing. For those of you who want to start a business or go into business for yourself, I started my journey as an entrepreneur after many, many, many months of doing research. And I did, you know, marketplace research. I talked to people that were in the industry I wanted to get into about holes they saw in the business and pros and cons. And when I finally put something together and launched it, I knew I had an action plan. I knew what I was going to do, what I was going to call it, how I was going to take, you know, my action steps moving forward. And I've done that with every business I've launched. And I think that's why the businesses that I create have traction right away. So I would suggest that, like, put some time into researching what lights you up and then who's doing that, and look at, well, maybe even go ask them, like, what would you do differently, or what do you see not happening here? And maybe you can fill that void.
I think that's a big piece of advice that that not enough people do or take the time to do. And that is, put it out to an advisory group or get a little group of people that you can say, hey, what do you think about this? I know I've had with my latest project, I don't think I've done this over the years as much as I should have, but I have been doing it more recently. Like, you know what? I need to pull in an advisory board with this. Like, we have this challenge app. And so I thought, I want to change the challenges on there, but who best to collaborate with than the people that have been using it and have been achievers in there over the last year. So that's what I did. I went in and said, who has been the top 10 consistent challenge achievers? And I'm doing an advisory meeting with them to say, what do you like about this? What do you don't like about it? What would you like to see different? What would you like to see new? Instead of just going and putting all the work into fixing it or changing it for the sake of changing it, it's like, well, what would make it better? And actually relying on a group of individuals. And
yeah,
I'm hearing more and more about that. Like, get a group of, you know, just a think tank group of people that you can say, hey, I'd love your opinion on this. It's so valuable, and yet I don't think enough people actually do it.
I did it with the first two businesses I started. The nonprofit, I had 18 months of research and development behind me before I hit the go button. And I had study groups at my home for like 6 months, like every Saturday for 6 months, I would cook these people dinner and I would basically pitch them. And so by the time I launched, there were, you know, roughly 100 people who in my town who knew what I was doing. And so I got, like, you know, my pilot program filled right away, a number of television segments right away. The second business came out of demand too. And it took others convincing me, hey, you should do this. And so I was like, all right, well, come to my living room and let's talk about it. The publishing house, it was like an absolute, like, divine, you know, if you've ever heard that term, divine download, it was like, I woke up and I got the sensation that I should do this. And I actually avoided it for like 9 solid months because I know the work that goes into building a business.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I can't do it again. I've done it twice. I can't do it again. And, you know, when you're avoiding something that you're supposed to do, I don't know how it happens in your life, but in my life, the business I was currently running basically stopped. It was like dry. And I was, you know, fine, I'll go do this. And so I spent a number of months researching distribution channels and retailers and what they look for in books and why certain retailers pick up certain books and they don't and others don't, and who was out there doing what I wanted to do. And so before I launched it, I got signed by a distribution company with, you know, who has the relationships with all these just, you know, retailers. And that was unheard of. Distributors don't sign freshman houses, yet alone a house that doesn't have a single client. And I made a deal with them and I promised I would deliver 20 books a year. And within the first couple of months I had, you know, 7 clients. So taking the time to do the research really is important so that you feel confident, because if you're asking somebody to come in and work with you and you don't have that confidence behind you, that is felt.
Absolutely. That's great. Such great advice. Thank you so much for that. So what are some new and exciting things that you're working on, and what do you think our listeners could benefit from?
Well, over the last several months, I've spoken to a lot of women who are in the place where they're like, I don't know what to do now that I've written it, or, you know, mm-hmm. what do you know about copyright or trademark, or can I write about my ex-husband? There's so much. Once you're done with the book, it's not like, okay, now it'll be published next week. There's this space in between that a lot of education can take place. And so we created a group program. It's actually a big circle, and we have various different phases that people can step into. But if you, we're starting it next month, it is a regular weekly conversation, some hot seat coaching, we'll do a manuscript review for you. But we're going to take on some of these bigger issues to help people who have finished their book but aren't necessarily ready for publication to address some, maybe there's some holes in your work, or maybe you did write about your ex and that person doesn't know about it. And what are the things that you really need to consider before you hit the publish button? So the Unapologetic Voice Circle launches in May, and we're really excited about that. And people can find information about that on our website.
Perfect. That sounds amazing.
Yeah. Thank you. We do a lot on Clubhouse, and I find that people have these types of questions the most. You know,
okay,
what do I do about writing about somebody who doesn't know I'm writing about them.
Change their name.
Be like, okay, well, yeah, that's a conversation. So
I love that. So you have found Clubhouse to be beneficial.
Yeah, I really do. I, for some reason, even if I go to just fill up my cup, I tend to get asked to speak, and then I don't want to turn it down, but it is such a beautiful opportunity to network. And, I've met some really amazing people there already. And, you know, co-moderating a lot of different talks, and it lights me up. So I'm grateful for it.
That's awesome. So I heard a lot of negative kind of from it in the beginning, and I haven't really, it's come up on my radar, and I've just kind of haven't heard a lot of positives. And then the last 3 days, it's just funny how that happens, but I've had 3 different people say how much they're using and love Clubhouse. So I thought, well, I need to like look at that again, I guess.
Yeah, I really like it. I do. I'd say like maybe 2 or 3 rooms a month, and then that's like moderating. And then I'll walk into a room, you know, a couple times a week and do what I can to fill up. If I see somebody I want to connect with them. But like I said, more than oftentimes, even if it's, you know, rooms of a couple hundred people, if they're like, who else wants to have a comment? I have such a wealth of experience, particularly when it comes to the space of storytelling, being visible, and entrepreneurship, and the mental health around burnout regarding entrepreneurship. If I'm in a room like that, I will speak up, and then my network grows. So you're given this opportunity to even, you know, use your voice for a couple minutes to create connection. I'm loving it.
Good, good. I love that. So this has been absolutely great. Thank you so much, Carrie, for your insight and wisdom and sharing your story with us. I appreciate it. And I'm sure that our listeners will too, especially those that are wanting to become authors or are thinking about that. This has been some really great advice for them. So I certainly do appreciate that. And to all of our listeners out there, thank you for joining us today and listening in and supporting Work From Your Happy Place. Remember to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. Leave us a review, or most important, share us with a friend. That is how we grow, and that's how everyone benefits more. So, till next time, we'll see you on Work From Your Happy Place.
Thanks for joining us at Work From Your Happy Place. If you like what you hear, please share it with your friends, and be sure to rate and review us on iTunes or Stitcher. For a free gift on finding your own happy place, please visit workfromyourhappyplace.com and click on the free audio button. Thanks again for listening.